David Hawkins is editor-in-chief of Fulcrum, a news outlet focused on reversing dysfunction in American government, also former senior editor of CQ and Roll Call. So I guess I want to go first to Attorney General Barr. Trump likes to fire people. Now we're hearing that Mulvaney, his chief of staff, is on thin ice. But Barr has survived so far. What do you see in his future?
I think Barr has played things obviously very differently than his predecessor, Senator Sessions. The last time Barr made headlines a few days before we're talking here was saying that any potential Justice Department investigation of anybody who's a candidate would need to go to his office for a thumbs up or thumbs down. He has played things very loyally to the president. There was some evidence during the impeachment trial that he, Attorney General Barr, had some knowledge of what was going on with Ukraine, and yet did not recuse himself the way Sessions did at the very start during Mueller. We talked the last time we were on the phone about Elise Stefanik making a sudden change of positioning for her career. It seems like, you know, Bill Barr, who was viewed as one of the paragons of centrist Republican virtue during the George W. Bush years, has made a different choice for the end of his career.
Okay, so Southern District of New York, in terms of what you just said, they're investigating Trump on a number of issues. When Barr says everything has to go through me, he's basically talking to them, right?
I think he is basically talking to them. That's exactly right.
Okay. So Democrats still want to work on infrastructure and lowering prescription drug costs. Is there any bipartisan possibility here?
I don't think so. I was actually talking to a bunch of folks that do infrastructure policy just the other day. People who thought when Donald Trump became president that this was going to be this and the tax bill were going to be this more than the tax. This was going to be the big domestic policy achievement of Trump's first term that was going to be done in a bipartisan way. Nobody thinks that anymore. The well is so poisoned in order that neither the Republicans, who might have been willing to, for example, raise the gas tax in order to fund some of this stuff, are not going to put their own anti-tax bona fides on the line for a bigger deal, and neither are the Democrats, who some of whom might have been willing to spend more on roads and bridges instead of subways and bike paths. Neither are they going to put their sort of environmental bona fides on the line for some big deal. So no, I don't really see bipartisan agreement there. And on prescription drugs, neither there. There would have been an opportunity at the State of the Union for the president to propose some bipartisan deal making with the House Democrats, who passed their own bill last year, and he chose not to do it. So I don't really think so.
I get more mail about changing the Electoral College than anything else. And they say, we have to change the Electoral College. And I always write back to them and say, you are aware you would have to do that by constitutional amendment. And then I don't hear from them again. You got any insights?
So I do think that that's true. And the Constitution is not going to change because, and we've all heard this number till we're blue in the face, that 18% of the Senate, 18% of the country is represented by, I think, 45% of the Senate or some number like that. So the small state senators aren't going to go for a constitutional amendment that takes away the power of their state, the disproportionate influence of those small red states. However, there is an alternative, which I find fascinating, which is called the Interstate Compact, in which states can pass laws and states with about 200 electoral votes have done so, saying if states with 270 electoral votes do what we're about to do, we will promise that our electors will always vote for the national popular vote winner. You'll hear it referred to as the Electoral Interstate Compact. Fascinating idea, totally constitutional. Unfortunately, it's been into all blue and deep blue purple states that have done this. And actually, one of those states, Colorado, the people of Colorado are going to vote this fall to get out of the thing. because there's sort of this buyer's remorse that, well, what if we keep voting blue and someday there's a Republican elected? We don't want our electors voting for the Republican.
Yeah, you pays your money, you takes your chance. David Hawkins, let's pursue that just a little bit. You think that the Democrats are behind this, the Republicans are not so much. Is that right?
Yeah, well, that's at least this interstate compact thing has only been embraced by states that are reliably blue. There has not been the Colorado would, as I say, would be the most purple one left, and it's the one that's thinking of getting out. So until a place like, you know, Texas or Florida or some gets involved, it's going to be hard to get it over that 270 number.
Well, Florida could do it. They'll shake your cage every once in a while and do something that people hadn't.
They did. They gave felons back the right to vote. So the people of Florida seem a little bit more centrist than the legislature of Florida, which is pretty conservatively Republican these days.
Let's talk about the politics of the next U.S. Census. Obviously, Trump is playing a hand here. Obviously, the way in which people are counted become very much. Do you ask them if they're a citizen, for example? And if you do, does that mean a lot of people aren't going to answer the doorbell? And frankly, everybody's supposed to be counted, whether they're here in any capacity, right?
That's right. The Constitution's pretty clear about it. It's supposed to be an enumeration of people, not citizens. It's very, very clear. So fortunately, for the people who want the most accurate census count, the president's efforts to add a citizenship question ended up getting essentially nullified by the Supreme Court. So they're not going to ask this question. What the Trump administration does plan on doing, however, is taking the census data and doing some sort of statistical manipulation or some polling or some kind of clever stuff to come up with a, well, we're going to try and this is how many of these people we think are actually citizens, and we might be able to use the citizenship only number for the allocations of federal aid or for the rewarding or punishing parts of the country with help. They cannot do it in terms of, and it is also the case that while nationally the U.S. House has to be apportioned, seats in the U.S. House have to be handed out based on the number of human beings that live in each state, the states themselves, it's not been decided by the Supreme Court whether the states themselves can draw their legislative districts based only on the populations of citizens.
Yes, and we all know about the gerrymander and how tough that can be, but New York State now, based on the way they count, the way I'm looking at it, they could either lose one or two congresspeople.
Right. New York has lost at least one, if not two, I think in every census since about 1960. The other one in your part of the country is, it looks very likely that Rhode Island, which has two House members, that they will go down to one at-large member, like Vermont and the Dakotas. And believe it or not, that House seat that's going to get taken away from Rhode Island will likely go to Montana, which will go from one seat to two seats.
It's always wonderful to talk to our friend, even if he says things we don't like. David Hawkins, on the Congressional Corner, editor-in-chief of the Fulcrum, F-U-L-C-R-U-M, a news outlet focused on reversing dysfunction in American government. Also, former senior editor of CQ and Roll Call and a friend of this radio station. David, please, you're always invited to keep coming back. Thanks.
Thank you so much.